I'm Matt Katz, in for Tanzina Vega, and you are listening to The Takeaway. There are about 5 million households in rural areas without broadband internet. Only about two-thirds of rural Americans have access to broadband, according to a Pew report. This gap has been called the digital divide. Policymakers have been focused on rural areas when it comes to providing the majority of Americans with access to high-speed internet. But these efforts overlook the fact that there are another 15 million households outside of rural America where people don't have broadband internet access either. And when people don't have internet at home or don't know how to use digital tools, no matter where they are in the country, many turn to their local library. Librarians are on the forefront of understanding our digital divide, and they know it's far more complicated than just having or not having the internet.
The digital divide, like you think of a chasm with people who can't access the internet on one side and people who can and the internet like on the other side. And it's really not so much like that. It's like a chasm with a bridge on it.
That's Lauren Comito, a librarian with the Brooklyn Public Library and editor of the book Tech for All, Moving Beyond the Digital Divide. I spoke with her to learn more about what the digital divide looks like in New York City.
And the more money you have, the better your bridge is. If you don't have a ton of money, you might have a smartphone, which can get you most of the way across the bridge, but not all the way. Like, you have to jump over some spots. If you have enough money to have a computer and broadband access at home, you're good. You're on the other side. You just stroll across this beautiful bridge, and there you are.
I also spoke with Jessamine West. She's a librarian and researcher in one of the country's rural communities, Randolph, Vermont, population 5,000.
Partly what you sometimes need is not just the access, right? Like, we used to think it was access to a computer, but then we got people access to a computer. And then we thought it was computer and broadband. But libraries mostly offer that. And then we would find that people had access to computers and broadband, and they were still struggling. And I think is sometimes you're in a community where nobody kind of knows how to use the technology. You know, it's like we talk about institutionalized poverty, right? Or institutionalized racism. Like, you live in these communities where nobody in your community has the skills that are necessary in order to kind of take it to the next level. What you really need a lot of times is someone to help you. And that person has to be a trusted someone.
That's a role that librarians often play, right? I mean, you're the ones that are then in that place when people are coming in looking for help to try to figure out how to fill out a resume, even to get started.
Yeah.
All the time.
Definitely. And I would say it's actually a job we're really particularly well suited to do. I'll have a lot of older adults come in where their grandchildren have set them up an iPad and then gone back to college or gone home or wherever they would go. And then they need to keep using it. So they come into the library, or they live with their grandchildren, but their grandchildren don't have the patience to slowly walk them through each step.
Or don't understand their specialized concerns, which is, you know, if you're in your 80s and you've got a shaky finger, it's definitely different clicking your way around an iPad than if you're, you know, 8 years old and have like completely perfect manual dexterity, right? Or if your eyesight isn't great. And there's a ton of assistive technology that you can use that can make it so much easier, but you have to know to do that. It's like when I first started teaching people how to use computers, I dealt with a whole bunch of, you know, new language learners in Seattle. And once they figured out the internet was also in Spanish, it was so much easier for them. But you just have to know to get them to that point, which involves understanding their needs.
Jessamine, what about other obstacles that people have to getting online? Like, for example, getting good internet access at home. Does that continue to be a challenge for folks in Vermont?
Huge problem here. I mean, around here, I live kind of in the village, which is the built-up part of Orange County, Vermont. But if you live up in the hills, in most cases, you have satellite as an option, and then you wait for EC Fiber, who's the local fiber internet business. And they're amazing, but it's expensive, actually, to lay down fiber cable. Like, we have jokes about the fact that some of our fiber cable is still laid by, like, a guy and a horse, right, going through. And I'm not lying. Like, that is happening around me where I live, because we have, you know, rivers and mountains and winter. Wow. All of which are very challenging. We have people all the time who, like, they bring their computer to the library so that they can do software updates because they've got bandwidth caps at home with their satellite connection, or they don't have internet at home. Like, try to update your operating system on a DSL line, it'll take days at this point.
Are there people who have smartphones who come to the library and they need to get on an actual computer? And why do they need to actually use that computer? And are these people of all ages and demographics that are trying to make that transition and that come to the library for that?
Yes, all the time. So, well, the first thing about a smartphone is that not every smartphone has the same capabilities. There are a lot of people who are probably still on Android KitKat on phones that have 8 megabytes of storage. And with that, you're really limited as to what you can do in terms of the things you can do on a phone, like how many apps you can have, how many pictures of your kid you can take, writing an essay on a phone. Kids do it all the time, but it's really difficult. Filling out job applications that only work in Internet Explorer because people never update their websites. The same with government websites, a lot of which have to be filled out in Internet Explorer or they won't work. Smartphones are really small. Even the big ones, it can be difficult to read like a long form article or write a long paper or make sure your resume doesn't have typos because you can't see them because it's very small, formatting it properly to send out. Like there's a lot of things that you need a real computer to do. Older adults will typically have different needs. You know, like they'll need to contact their grandkids or fill out an application for a property tax exemption, all sorts of stuff that's just difficult on a small screen.
And some of that stuff requires an email address, which you might not necessarily have.
Or if you do have it, you forgot the password because you haven't used it in a long time and you don't have the recovery process set up properly. And so you have to create yet another email address in order to fill out this new application.
Wow.
And then you have to remember the password.
Right.
I've had a couple library patrons where I remembered their password.
Smartphones, generally speaking, are kind of walled gardens of stuff, right? They only, you can only put on them what the company who runs the phone lets you have. And so a lot of these things really encourage people to use the cloud, but people don't totally understand the cloud. They don't know how to sync among different devices. Maybe they have a desktop at home, but there is a whole kind of ecology of how the internet works, what a web address is, what a link is, how a web page works, in addition to understanding how to use your device.
Lauren, what are the primary reasons people are coming in to use the internet at your library? Aside from writing resumes and applying for jobs and government benefits, are there other reasons people are coming in, maybe just to have fun online?
Yeah, there's a lot of reasons why you'd want to access the internet that don't have anything to do with official things. You know, you'd need to send email, personal emails. You know, you can apply for jobs, but you can also watch YouTube videos or watch movies. Or I have a group of kids that comes in and plays Minecraft together on our computers so that they get to have the social experience of playing Minecraft together when they don't really have computers at home to do that with. You know, and watching YouTube and playing Minecraft is just as important an access issue as filling out a job application or an online
form.
Why
is watching YouTube just as important?
I mean, why shouldn't people who don't have a computer be able to enjoy popular culture? That's important. That makes them part of our society. We have this whole thing on YouTube where my daughter was explaining dank memes to me the other day. And I understand what a dank meme is. She's a little fuzzy on it. But like, that's a common cultural language that we have that if you don't have access to the internet to participate in these more recreational ways, then you don't get to participate in this and understand this other part of our society and our culture.
Yeah, it leaves you, can leave you a bit detached.
Yeah.
What about up in Vermont, Jessamine? Do people come into the library to look up dank memes, or are there other surprising?
I mean, we have the Minecraft kids in the same way. We have like snacks after school because we have a bunch of kids who are living with food insecurity, and so they can come to the library and have something to eat after school, and then take over all the computers and play whatever it is that they're playing. I sometimes make them explain it to me, but I'm always looking for the thing that'll click with people who are not really online. What's going to make the online experience seem like it's for them? And so I had a gentleman in one of my drop-in time classes. All he wanted to do was watch YouTube videos of tractor engines running, which is a thing you can do. I had no idea. But he found the tractor engine community on YouTube, and now he's an internet person. That is a thing he can do and share with other people. And the big thing I think that Lauren sort of alluded to, but we definitely find it even more up here, is access to the internet is your connection to other people in some pretty specific ways, especially up here where we have 6 months of winter. I know there's a lot of people online in various places who are like, Facebook, you know, the panopticon. But around here, in many cases, Facebook is the way you get invited to events. You have people who, in many ways, want to connect with other people. So you get people coming into your library to set up like a dating profile so that they can meet other people. It helps people make human connections. And if you don't know how to use a computer, you miss out. People meet other people on the internet, right? And around here, it's also church and school and dating websites. And that's a thing people really feel more comfortable having a computer to do. And so they show up at our library and ask for help.
And you also teach a class on eBay, is that right?
I have historically. We have adult education segment of the local tech center. And I've taught in the past eBay classes, because what do you do in the wintertime, right? You sell all the junk out of your barn. And, you know, a lot of times it's just people showing up with like kind of random tennis racket, this, that, and the other. But I did have this one woman. This is like my legacy story about the digital divide. We taught her how to use eBay. She had this like Mont Blanc pen that she dragged up from some closet. And she was like, this is very valuable. And I'm like, sure it is. Okay, great. But, you know, she learned how to use eBay. Uh-huh. She took some pictures of it. We put it up on eBay and she sold it for $700.
Wow.
Which makes her like a weird local hero, because everybody believes they've got, you know, amazing stuff in their barns. Everybody's got a barn full of junk up here. And helping people, you know, make money solves a very real problem for them.
I'm curious if you guys can talk me through what happens when someone comes in who has no digital literacy whatsoever. I mean, they don't have an email address. They've never really been online. They have a thing that they want to do. Do you sit with them and like start from the beginning and say, okay, HTTP:// like, how do you go about it?
Well, I think the most important thing is usually when that person is coming in, again, in 2019, their self-talk about this is usually like, I'm such an idiot. I got to do this thing. And so the first thing I'm always like is like, what? Are you kidding? You're the person who runs that sheep farm? You run a sheep farm? All I can do is type. Like, try to explain to the person, like, it's just one set of skills. We're totally going to jump through the hoops that you have to jump through. I'm always like, let's take apart the problem. Let's build it into little pieces. I try to sort of explain to them about how long it's going to take, because I think for a lot of people, they think things are going to be quick because they see, you know, the internet on TV and it looks kind of fun, interesting, and simple. And I'm like, well, it's complex, but it's not hard. That's my line a lot of times. Like, there's a lot of pieces, but none of them are something you can't do. So let's step through it. And again, like with the password thing, I'll have a piece of paper that's like, my email address is blah. My password is blah. My recovery questions are this and this. Yeah. So that when they walk out the door, if they have somebody else help them with it later, because what you don't want is to be the only person who can help them with their thing, that other person has the information that they need in order to help that person.
I used to help with resumes a lot as a job information librarian. And every once in a while, somebody would just say, I can't spell. And they don't mean they can't spell words properly. They mean they can't write and they can't read. And so that person has a completely different set of needs, right? They need adult basic education classes and they need all of this stuff, but they also just need the job that they need to write their resume for. And so our responsibility to that person is slightly different. Like, I would actually write the resume for that person because they need a job or they won't be able to do the adult basic education classes.
Jessamine, what do you think the next few years will bring when it comes to the issues and challenges around the digital divide?
Well, I think we're going to have to take a long, hard look at the fact that as more and more people get at least some kind of access to broadband, right? Like, nowadays in my neighborhood, most people live places where they at least have smartphone access to the internet, though not entirely. There's still places you can live in my town where your phone doesn't work on any network, right? And I think we're going to have to deal with the fact that as more and more people get connected to broadband, we're still finding that people are left behind.
And Lauren, another challenge coming down the pike is that the 2020 census will be the first that will be completed largely online. What is that going to mean for people who don't have internet access at home?
Well, from what I can tell, it's going to mean that they are at the library. We're all across New York State preparing for what's going to happen when the census goes online, making sure that our computers are secure enough, that we have access, that we are training staff to help people fill out those forms, providing access to the computers in multiple languages. We've been watching this for a couple of years, but what it's going to come down to is that people are going to use the library for that because we are the main source of internet access that's free and available to the public in the city.
I've been speaking with Lauren Comito, Neighborhood Library Supervisor at the Leonard Branch of the Brooklyn Public Library and editor of the book Tech for All, Moving Beyond the Digital Divide, as well as Jessamine West, librarian and researcher in Randolph, Vermont. Thank you both so much for joining me, and thanks for all the hard work you do.
Thank you for
having us.
Thanks
so much.
You've got thoughts on this also.
Hey, this is Sarah in Seattle. My elderly father and his spouse do not have internet access at home in Iowa, so this really contributes to their profound social isolation, especially for the one who doesn't drive.
Mary, I'm from Philadelphia. I don't have internet. I'm 75, and I grew up in a whole different age. I find that it's an inconvenience in trying to get information.
There's a lot going on right now. Mounting economic inequality, threats to democracy, environmental disaster, the sour stench of chaos in the air. I'm Brooke Gladstone, host of WNYC's On the Media. Want to understand the reasons and the meanings of the narratives that led us here, and maybe how to head them off at the pass? That's On the Media's specialty. Take a listen wherever you get your podcasts.